You are listening to Fanthatrax.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
It's not true. That's impossible.
Hello and welcome to episode 110 of Making Tracks, the only Star Wars podcast that's keeping the British end up, and brought to you by those delightful chaps from fanfortracks.com. Joining me this week, as always, is our man in Birmingham. And he can only be described as a Fanfortrax equivalent of M. That's right, it's Mr. Mark Newbold. Mark, how you doing, buddy?
Yeah, I could take that M as a nickname. I could live with that. He's a dude. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well. I was actually mainly referring to Judi Dench as M. But, I know. You know, if you want to take Ralph Fiennes, that's fine with me. You know, it's all good. Or Bernard Lee, either or. So, yeah. How's your week in Star Wars been so far?
It's been a good one. My latest Rancho Obi-Wan membership kit has arrived. I've cool. got to Showdown at the Fair by George Mann. So the first non-Project Luminous member to write something from the High Republic. So that's worth noting. I've got the first two issues of High Republic Adventures to review. I've got all sorts of bits and bobs. Life Day Cookbook, Secrets of the Sith. It's a good week. How about you?
This weekend, I was dragged to Westfield Shopping Centre.
Dragged.
To look after... Yeah, I know. To look after Black Widow, Deadpool, Captain America, Iron Man, and Batman. I was crewing for the Real Icons, which is kind of like a sub-club of the UK garrison. So it's basically all the non-Star Wars costumes, all the iconic movie characters. Obviously, these days tends to be a lot of superheroes and stuff. So that was a lot of fun. As you can imagine, walking around at a department store with Deadpool, especially in the lingerie section, was, well, ooh. Yeah. Need I say any more? On the purchasing front, what have I got? Well, I actually got a couple of nice prototype Boba Fett Crayola figures. One from our good friend Matt Booker from his little store and another one from Star Action Figures. So I've got two now, which is a bit annoying because I was only going to get the one, so I didn't have to chase all six variants. But now I've got two, so it probably sounds like I'm going to have to start chasing.
But are they two different ones or are they exactly the same?
They are two different ones, which is
good.
Yes.
That's a relief.
So I've got one which has basically got a red head and an orange body, and the other one is a yellow head with a purple body. So actually Matt chucked in a really nice R2KT patch as well, so bless him.
Sweet.
So
nice one.
He's a legend for doing that. Other than that, actually, it's been a bit quiet. I haven't really brought a load of stuff. I mean, I have actually pre-ordered quite a lot of the Hasbro stuff that's come out. So that will drop May. I think some of it is for now.
Then again, that's not as far away as you think, is it?
It's not when you think, it's only 80 days to like the Book of Boba Fett. So it's a...
Thank goodness, I thought you were going to say Christmas then. Don't say that.
Well, no, it's even less, isn't it?
I know.
Only, I guess it'll be, 74, 75 days till Christmas then, if 80 days is meant to be Book of Boba Fett, which is, scary. So with that in mind, we should get a move on and talk about some Star Wars news, shall we?
Let's kick off and start with something really quite sad. The actor Gerald Holm, who people will know for playing Tessic in Return of the Jedi and a Mon Calamarian officer as well, has passed away. We hadn't seen him for a little while. He was out in the convention scene during the summer. We saw him last, I think, from memory at Echo Base, which would have been a couple of years ago. I'd known Gerald good long and while, going back to, 2005, 2006, when I interviewed him on Lightsaber. He was our very special guest when I was running Lightsaber. We had a stand in the fan zone at the original celebration. Wonderful Mary Franklin gave us special dispensation to have a guest in what was basically the fan area. We're raising money for charity, so we raised over £1,000 for adrenal cortical cancer. So Gerald was very generous in what he gave us there. He just wanted to help out and be a part of the show and be present at the event. Terribly, terribly sad. And as ever, when people pass away, you don't know when the last time's going to be.
I last spoke to him at, was it the Smugglers Star Wars Day at Croydon a couple of years ago? Yeah, really, really chatty. And so he was a member, an honorary member of Elstree Base and Rebel Legion, and I believe the 501st Legion as well. So he's well known and liked by all the fandom. And it's really nice, actually, on the page that you've got, kind of his obit, I suppose you'd say, on FanForTracks, you've got a lovely photo of him with Peter Mayhew and him with Radio 1 presenter Mike Reed.
Ha ha, yes. Yes, Mike, legendary Mike Reed. Yes, thank you for that. That was, I tell you where that was. That was in the Wirral. That was, I said Liverpool once and somebody pulled me up. He went, it's not Liverpool, it's the Wirral, the other side of the river. But it was at a place, an event called Starport. They did two events. Uh-huh. And I can't remember if that was 2007 or 2008. I think that was 2008. But yeah, you're right. Peter was there. There's a whole bunch of folks there and Gerald was there. And yeah, that was a good laugh. I remember going for a bite to eat with him after and just talking, because he loved to talk about the fandom, about the fans. He was very active and involved with fan groups, especially in Europe. I think he was one of the very first, I think him and Paul Blake were the first Star Wars actors to go to Poland, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
You know, he travelled a lot. He did a lot of stuff in Spain, very, very into his fan groups and such. Terribly sad news. Again, as time moves on, it's 2021. The original trilogy is nearly... really, with Jedi, nearly 40 years behind us. It's incredible to think that. So we're very lucky to still have so many of the guys left. But obviously, nature and time dictates that they're not going to be here forever. So enjoy them whilst they are. Gerald, like you say, was certainly one of the good guys.
Hello, this is Gerald Holm, the actor who played Tessex Squidhead and the Mon Calamari officer in Star Wars Return of the Jedi.
So A Galaxy Far, Far Away isn't the only place there we can see all of ILM's amazing VFX work. They have done some amazing work on the new James Bond film, so Bond 26, No Time to Die. This is, I believe, the second Bond film that ILM has worked on doing VFX. They did VFX on Spectre for Sam Mendes, and so they're doing similar kind of stuff, I guess, for No Time to Die. Have you had a chance to go and see it at the cinema yet, Mark?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Quite apart from the fact that ILM worked on it, couldn't not see a Bond film at the cinema, especially given that we're now getting out to the shows more and getting out to cinemas more and seeing stuff as much as we can. I absolutely loved it. I know you're a Bond aficionado and that's your second great love, isn't he, Bond?
Yeah.
After yourself. But I thought it was fantastic. I was blown away by it. Obviously, Daniel Craig's last turn as Bond. What a way to go out. What did you make of it?
To be honest, it caught me completely off guard. I'll be honest, I was quite emotional. And And actually, Karen, she tried to get some words out of me at the end of the film, and I was just like, I just couldn't say anything till probably the next day. I literally just didn't say a word. It doesn't matter if it's Indiana Jones like you have, or if it's James Bond or Star Wars or whatever. We always have these characters that, you know, have been with you since, you know, you've been a kid. So they mean more than actually sometimes you can actually even convey. I thought generally the way No Time to Die panned out, it was a really great and emotional final film for Daniel Craig. Looking back at it, bearing in mind they had so much issues with studios and delays for writer strikes and stuff like that and Quantum Solace and all that, they've actually managed, if you take his five films, you know, they've made a fairly cohesive story arc about this character. If you don't actually see any other James Bond films, but you only see the Daniel Craig five films, you actually get a really good view of who James Bond is, and actually a closer facsimile to who Ian Fleming's James Bond is as well, which I think is massively important. And also, let's be fair, it's dragging people back to the cinema, which is what the cinema is sorely needing right now.
There's certain films that are doing very well. Venom's doing well. Shang-Chi's done very well. Yeah. Bond's had a good start. I think internationally it did really well. So, yeah, you're right. I think this is the film, certainly here in the UK, that's going to put bombs back on six. Bond and Doctor Who, aren't they? They're our sort of national pride when it comes to film and television.
Exports. Yeah.
But I think with this film, and it's slightly off topic, but will make some sort of sense. Marvel as a company, you know, in the comics, it doesn't matter if Spidey's 18 in 1963 or 18 in 1983 or 2003. Spidey is the perennial teenage character.
Exactly.
And sometimes they progress him in age, but generally you keep him as a youngster. And with Bond, you go from Connery to Lazenby and back to Connery, then to Moore and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And you had the same M and the same Q and the same Moneypenny. And they never addressed that, well, yeah, it's Scottish anymore, or he's not. You know what I mean? They don't address the elephant in the room that, you know, it's a different guy. But with, like you say, with the Craig set of films, it certainly is the most cohesive unit of movies. You know, Jaws is in Spy Who Loved Me and Moonraker, and there's little overlaps and certain characters and such. But for the most part, they are standalone adventures. This was a bit of a saga. So, I can see why you got so into that element of it.
Yeah. Also, what's great about James Bond is that, you know, there's clear links to Star Wars. I think, actually, if it wasn't for the work that we were doing in the film industry with the Bond films, that, you know, we may not have actually got the talent that we needed to make the original Star Wars trilogy. But also just think about all the different actors over the years, Jeremy Bullock playing Smithers for one, for example, who've had bit cameo roles or what, you know, all sorts of roles in James Bond films have been in Star Wars. And so there's these really nice kind of like links to both franchises, which I think is probably why you get a lot of Star Wars fans who are big James Bond fans and vice versa.
That's true, yeah. James Bond stage, a lot of Star Wars has been shot there. And as you say, all back in the 70s, especially with the model making. And even up to, I think, GoldenEye was the first Bond film to be made at Leavesden.
Yeah.
And then GoldenEye moves out and Episode One moves in. And so there's links there between, you know, with the studios they were filming in and such. That's a great point. Yeah, there is a lot of overlaps when you look at it, especially because both series of films, for the most part, I mean, a prequel trilogy moved to Australia after that. But other than that, there's a lot of overlap in terms of talent. Yeah.
I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson, and you are following Fanthatracks.
Book lovers, last week, StarWars.com dropped some fantastic news. There's four new fiction books coming out in 2022, including Tales of Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, Anakin and Obi-Wan. There's a Good versus Evil short stories collection. And the centrepiece of all of them, Shadow of the Sith by Adam Christopher. What do you make of these books? You've covered quite a lot of ground here in terms of time. They come out between May and July next year. They're looking pretty tidy.
So, ultimately, Luke Skywalker and Lando Calrissian on a mission to find Exegol. Hell yeah, that's Rise of Skywalker prequel territory, so I'm well up for that one. That one should be really fun. Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, Anakin and Obi-Wan. You know, I wonder if there's going to be some kind of connectivity between those books, be it thematic kind of connectivity, but maybe we kind of see similar kind of themes, but different perspectives being explored.
Yeah, it just, I mean, they all obviously have the obvious Force connections. I mean, I think the one that people will gravitate to initially is that Lando and Luke one, because back in the day in the comics, there was always good Lando and Luke stories. So there's a nice little link there. And the fact that it's 20 years on from Jedi, you're still over a decade ahead of The Force Awakens. It's an area we've not been into yet. So there's some interesting scope to see what the galaxy's like there. And the whole thought of Luke having like dark side Force visions of something coming along. And it kind of infers in the write-up that he's aware of Exegol, but doesn't really know what it is. You know, so when Lando turns up and comes with reports of a Sith menace, it's going to get the old stories going. Ochi of Bestoon's in it as well, who's been currently in Darth Vader comic.
Yeah.
So that's interesting because he's turned out to be quite an interesting
he's
character.
He's quite a fun character, isn't he?
Yeah,
actually.
He is.
Bearing in mind that we see like 15 seconds of him in The Rise of Skywalker, they've made quite a charismatic character out of him. He's quite cocky, isn't he? He does like to push Vader around a bit, which is quite fun.
It's funny, you know, Vader had it all with Aphra, didn't he? You know, he's had these characters that have sort of pushed his buttons a little bit. And you've got to wonder what Anakin inside the arm is thinking about that. Just lets it wash over him because, you know, hey, I'm Darth Vader and who cares? Brotherhood by Mike Chen. Again, that's Anakin and Obi-Wan. Clone Wars era story. We're going to learn about what happened on Catanomoidia that Obi-Wan mentioned during those opening moments of Revenge of the Sith. So that looks fun. Stories of Jedi and Sith as well, coming out in June. So that's a short story. I think there's 8 or 9 short stories there. So some interesting authors. Alex Segura's back, who'd done the Poe Dameron book. And Michael Kogi's back writing Delia Dawson. So there's some interesting folks there. And then finally, Padawan by Kirsten White, Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon. So this is pre-Phantom Menace. There's a whole good bunch of stories there. Mm. Yeah, it was a good drop to make. It was a good bunch of stories to drop. And the same week, they also announced that coming in April 2022, Dark Horse are going to be releasing an Art of Star Wars Visions book as well. Not a huge amount of information about that, but given what we saw in the show, people are going to be very fascinated to see that.
Yeah, I think so. That would just be an interesting read through. And I suppose we've had different Star Wars art books. And, you know, if you even look at the art of books like, you know, The Art of Mandalorian or The Art of Rogue One or whatever, they've kind of almost fallen into that behind the scenes book slot now, haven't they? They sometimes talk about like the character development of like, you know, a character over the pre-production period amount. And then, you know, you find out that in the films that, you know, they explore those kind of characters a little bit more in terms of like the designs of that. Then when you look at The Mandalorian, it's very much a very clear, concise design process. Like Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau kind of had very clear ideas of what they wanted from the visuals and stuff. So it'll be interesting with the Art of Star Wars Visions, whether or not the 9 studios come with just maybe 1 or 2 ideas, or if it's, again, it's like an iterative process where they're kind of refining and we're going to see different variations on, you know, the final product that we actually see on the screen.
Yeah, that's true. I think specifically for Visions, it'll be very interesting to see how as you say, how the artists sketched up, built up, worked their way towards the characters that we saw on screen, because that's always something that's of interest. I mean, back in the day, you know, when they were looking on the OT,
yeah,
a lot of those designs that never got used ended up in West End Games manuals and mm-hmm. stuff, and they didn't waste anything, or as much as they didn't need to waste, or as much as they couldn't waste, they would work it in there somewhere. Of course, now we've got an absolute swathe, a plethora of stuff that, you know, that's not necessarily needed. You design something fresh and new now, or take a cue from something old. I was pleased to hear about there being an art of visions.
Yeah.
I didn't expect that. That was a nice surprise, I would say.
All the book announcements are nice surprises. It's something a little bit different, because obviously we've been very much wrapped up and focused on The Mandalorian and The High Republic for the, you know, from a publishing perspective for the last year or so. So actually to kind of see some other stories being told in, you know, the prequel era and the post-OT era is quite nice. I'm really looking forward to kind of get my ears, because I'm hoping they're going to do audiobooks on all of these.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
The maiden voyage of Galactus Star Cruiser is a sellout. Not a sellout as in they've sold out. It's a sellout as in there's no seats left. Gold Note residents, Club 33 members, Disney Vacation Club members, annual pass holders all have the chance to get in early and get their seats on that maiden voyage. They booked the whole thing out, completely gone. Now you're moving forward into March for bookings for later voyages, if you want to refer to it as that. Regular folks like me and thee, if we're so fortunate to have the cash and the moolah to do it, can start booking from the 28th of October. So you're still 17 days away, as we speak, from being able to do it. But what did you make of this? I wasn't surprised at all that it sold out. I'm guessing you're not surprised either.
No, not at all. I just wonder what the hell Golden Oak residents and Club 33 members are, because Golden Oaks kind of sounds like a retirement home and Club 33 sounds like some kind of swingers club. So, I mean, I don't quite know how they've got these corporate deals with Disney, but they've managed to. So, you know, it's all good. It's not surprising, really. I'd be interested to see what the demand's like for the general public when it does go on and how quickly it gets sold up. Are you expecting there to be a massive demand, or do we think this is going to be a slow burn to begin with?
I think there's always going to be people who have the cash or who are not fazed by whacking it on a credit card and paying for it later.
Yeah, that's
There'll always be enough people. There's always going to be people who are happy to do that.
Yeah.
And for something as special as this, once this has been out and been going for a couple of 3 weeks and folks start coming back going, oh my goodness, you've got to try this, it's amazing, then I think people will be a little bit more, you know, ready to take the plunge. Initially, early days, you know, like we mentioned, Vacation Club, pass holders and such. Not so much pass holders, because that's more of a loyalty thing on behalf of Disney's. It's not going to break the bank. But a Disney Vacation Club membership is not cheap. And I don't know what the others are. I'm assuming that's a similar thing. So they're welcoming in and giving the opportunities to people who have shown loyalty to Disney. But I think going ahead, yeah, I think this is going to be, and there's only 64 rooms, so I think this is going to be sold out for, you know, once you get to the 28th of October, I wouldn't be surprised if by the middle of November, you're looking, if you want a book, you're looking at 2023 and onwards. So I think these are going to sell out. And yeah, I think it's a bold move.
Mm.
This hasn't been cheap, but it'll be interesting to see how it plays out in the long term.
Yeah. So I just did a quick wiki search, and Club 33 is a private dining club located within the Disney Park grounds, I guess. So it opened in 1967, and the club was modelled after numerous executive lounges created by pavilion sponsors in the 1964 New York World's Fair. So it sounds like, yeah, it's a fairly exclusive place to go. It's probably the kind of place where you could see a lot of mahogany and leather and lots of people smoking cigars. So, you know, which is exactly what you'd have on a you know, Star Cruiser, I would imagine, playing Sabacc.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, it makes perfect sense. So I watched the other day the Behind the Attraction episode. Mm. And they talked about, you know, they did a whole episode on the Disneyland Hotel, or Hotel Disneyland, depending on which way you want to read it. And I got to the end and I was hoping, a bit like they did with Star Tours, where they kind of had a section about Galaxy's Edge, they were going to do something about the Galactic Star Cruiser, but they didn't. So I was a little bit bummed about that, but I'm expecting, and I wouldn't be surprised if there's either going to be a special episode focusing on this, because this will be something that I'm sure Disney will want to push into streaming. And wouldn't be surprised come March if Dr. Aphra or somebody else will find their way onto the Halcyon Star Cruiser in some of their capers, because, you know, they do like a tie-in.
That's a great point, you know. That's a really good point, because, yeah, like you say, you go to Galaxy's Edge. Is it V. Moradi, the character that's the spy there? There's her there, so that makes all the sense in, you know, that kind of location. Of course, this experience, they refer to it as a revolutionary two-night experience when you are the hero. And it is sort of mentioned and pushed as being quite bespoke that should you be so fortunate to go more than once, you would have a different experience the second time, or you could have a different experience the second time. If you make the same choices, then you probably have the same experience. But you know what I'm getting at? There's an element of manipulation there that will make it a different experience, which is great. But yeah, like you say, you throw Aphra in there, or you throw some, well, we've got Hondo at Galaxy's Edge, but you know, you throw characters in that people like and love, that could become quite the thing. That could be really cool. And you know, Galaxy's Edge is amazing, obviously, but this is like a premier experience. This is a premium experience. If they're ever going to chuck in an actual actor from the films to play their own character for a day in the park, this is where they'll do it. So absolutely, there's the opportunity to do things that are really special that people come out and go, you will not believe who was actually here today. It was actually whoever playing whatever character or whatever the thing might be. This is where they can do bespoke things that are really very cool.
Hey man, it's me, Kevin Smith, Star Wars fan, Fantatrax fan.
So it's been a few weeks, but we have, and we have had for a while, we just haven't got round to it. We have got a listener's question. This is from Paul in Australia, and I shall read the question out right now. Hey guys, I have a quick question I would like to hear your opinions on. It's a quick question, it won't be a quick answer. What was Palpatine's purpose for keeping Maul alive after his encounter on Mandalore, where he defeated him? Was it to set up Crimson Dawn? And if so, how does that benefit him? Or was there some other, as yet unknown reason? Kindest regards, Paul in Australia. So basically, why would Palpatine keep Maul alive after they had that encounter on Mandalore? And yeah, what is Palpatine's part, if any, in Crimson Dawn? Because Crimson Dawn, it was a sizable operation. People were aware of it. Why would Palpatine allow Maul to do that? Is it to unstabilize the underworld? Palpatine got us another plan. Was he still working with Maul and we just haven't learnt about it yet? What are your gut feelings? What do you think?
If memory serves correctly, there was a comic series, and I believe it's canon. It was the Son of Dathomir comic.
It was canon. It was the very first canon, I believe.
Yeah, it was. And basically, that picks up at the end of the events of the Clone Wars series, I think it was it 5 or 6, where Savage dies by the Emperor and Maul gets defeated. And Maul gets taken to a prison called, I think it was a Spire, but I can't remember where it's placed. Yeah. And basically he's tortured because Palpatine wants to get the location of Mother Talzin out of Maul. The reason for keeping him around wasn't so much to do with Crimson Dawn, at least at that point anyway, but it was because he wanted the location of Mother Talzin. Because at some point, I think in Palpatine's early formative years, he studied with Mother Talzin to learn more about, was it the Mystic Force or whatever it is, you know, how the Night Sisters communicate with the Force and how their interaction is. I think it was the Death Watch, or those who are loyal to Maul, some of the Mandos, they come and rescue him, and then that's when they take him back to somewhere. And I think that's when he starts to talk about and form the Shadow Collective, which is that group which had Black Sun and the Pikes. And which I guess in some respects you could almost say is a bit like a proto-Crimson Dawn, but it wasn't Crimson Dawn by name. But I think that is at least the initial early elements of Darth Maul as a underworld fringe character. Now, I think with respect to, you know, the underworld and actually having maybe something like Crimson Dawn, which could potentially have some kind of like puppetry by Palpatine, that it does make a certain amount of sense, because we see in the War of the Bounty Hunters how, you know, the Empire, it allows all these criminal organizations to exist because there's like a benefit there. There's like a symbiosis between, like, the stuff that the Empire can't necessarily do overtly, but if you get the underworld to do it, then you can justify it a little bit and people can turn blind eyes and, you know, it's all swept under the carpet. So I suppose if you actually were to have an organization that was basically run by the Empire, it makes even more sense. But I don't even know why Palpatine would keep Maul around, unless either Palpatine's got something on Maul, or basically he thinks that actually he's not a threat whatsoever. And whatever he knows about Darth Sidious as a persona is so little that actually it's of no consequence to him now that he is, you know, the Emperor and the Jedi have basically been wiped out.
Who's ever going to believe Maul if he comes out with anything? Because you're going to instantly not believe him.
Yeah.
Secondly, people aren't even going to believe it's him anyway. And more importantly, who even knew about Darth Maul, really,
to begin
other
with,
than the Trade Federation? He was such a shadowy character that he's not a known adversary to most of the galaxy. He really is the upper echelons of, you know, the Jedi and of the Empire, and those people who would need to know, you know, Palpatine's advisors who would need to know.
People were discussing, was Darth Maul really a Sith apprentice, or was he just kind of more like a Sith assassin? And actually, did Palpatine have, you know, was he already trying to fight, you know, line up Count Dooku? Because I suppose there is that thing, isn't there? Because really, in some respects, you could almost argue that Darth Maul is kind of like the henchman. He has as much presence as Vader does in A New Hope.
Yeah, he's the brute in that film, like Vader was in A New Hope.
Exactly,
yeah, yeah.
You know, so, I mean, obviously, I suppose we have to see where Crimson Dawn goes. And obviously, again, maybe we'll find out with the Kira stories that we're going to get at the end of the year, or what happens with her and actually her relationship to Darth Maul, and how does she just survive or just best him in some way? Because you kind of think, correct me, listeners, if I'm wrong, if I'm missing out some continuity, but he's taken prisoner and then he just disappears, basically, after Mandalore, and then when next time we see him is on the Sith homeworld in Rebels, you know, and it's like, how does he get there? And it's kind of assumed that, I think he even says, like, the Emperor abandoned him there or something. So it's like, what's happened in between that period? You know, are we going to see that? Maybe it wasn't the Emperor. Maybe it was Kira who, you know, marooned him there. And maybe that's how she gets control of Crimson Dawn. She doesn't kill him because she can't, but she puts him out, you know, out of action, and then says to all the Crimson Dawn people, hey, yeah, I've, you know, he's dead. I'm now in command.
I think you could look at Kira as a character that, I know people have said for years, you know, we've only Thrawn back, they got Thrawn back. There's various characters they want back from the EU, and certain ones will come back. I think you could look at Kira almost as a Mara Jade type character.
I think so.
When she faces off with Vader in War of the Bounty Hunters, I think issue 3 or 4, that kind of interaction is a bit of a deadlock. To my mind, reading that, it felt a little bit like Stormtrooper shooting to miss on the Death Star so they could find Yavin. It wouldn't surprise me one little bit if Palpatine has set things up to a degree and Maul was in on it enough to justify his existence continuing, but also serve his former master, or maybe he's still his present master. Because like you say, if you consider Maul a Sith assassin rather than a Sith apprentice, I know he refers to him as that, but it's carrot and stick, isn't it? You know, you get Maul out of the way, it begets Dooku. You get Dooku out of the way, the two sabers in Sith, and it brings in Anakin. There's the spot, always two, rule of two sort of thing.
Exactly. So,
but I think there could be layers of subtlety and layers of involvement with what Maul's doing, because it wouldn't surprise me. You go back to Empire, you see the Empire consorting with bounty hunters in 1980. So we know that they do that. We've always known they do that. To what depth is their involvement in Crimson Dawn? It could be that actually Kira's more of an agent of the Empire than perhaps we realise at this juncture. You mentioned all those gaps. It could happen, couldn't it?
That's it. I mean, and maybe in some respects, and obviously we're never going to know, but by not having a Solo 2 and 3, they've actually created this vacuum, and actually we could maybe get some even more interesting kind of storytelling, because what you can see and how you play stories out in a film can be, you know, compressed, whereas, you know, we've got the ability now with comics and you know, cross, you know, media publishing and stuff like that, where they can really take a big story, like for 10, 15 years where we know nothing about Kira until she pops back up, and you've got like a whole epic there. She gets trained by Maul, so maybe that's how she has the ability to stand off against Vader, because to a degree, Palpatine is, you know, as we kind of seen, is training Vader and putting him through the ringer, and then obviously Sidious trained Maul and that, so there's that whole familiarity and like fighting styles and stuff like that. So there's definitely a lot of scope here, I think. It doesn't necessarily, for me, make Maul much more of an interesting character, but it really opens up Kira as to have a lot of story potential.
Yeah, because in Solo, the Kira storyline, well, it was the B storyline, because Solo is the A storyline in that film. Before, in the past, when he said he'd not read the Brian Daley books, and if you read the original Han Solo trilogy, each book is its own thing. Mm-hmm. It's an adventure, then another adventure, then another adventure, and there's not that much overlap. And a Solo 2 doesn't have to involve Crimson Dawn and Kira. It's a big galaxy, so he can be going anywhere he wants. So you certainly could do a Solo 2 and 3 without ever touching on the Kira storyline again. And it's a bit like Lando and Han part ways at the end of the first Solo movie. It's really kind of heavily inferred, not overtly, so they could easily go back on it if they want to, but that Han and Lando don't have any more interaction until Bespin in Empire.
Yeah.
They've got the choice which way they want to play it. So Solo and Chewie and the Falcon can go off and have adventures all over the shop as they're building that reputation that he's got that leads up to dumping the Imperial, you know, the Imperial shipment
exactly.
That's mentioned in Star Wars. That would be fascinating to see. But you set up Crimson Dawn It's an EU thing, I know, but Black Sun coming in Shadows of the Empire felt like Black Sun was the top tier gangster organisation in the galaxy. Even Jabba speaks basic to Shizor sort of thing. Well, there's no Shizor in this dojo anymore. He's not a character that they want to use, but Black Sun's around. But then Black Sun, the Pikes, like you say, there's lots of other syndicates, and moving into the sequel trilogy, you know, there's even more, isn't there, as the galaxy fractures after Endor and Battle of Jakku and all that other stuff, that there's a lot more of these concerns around. Well, we're not going that far out. We know Maul's endgame in Rebels, yep. But we don't know Kira's. So as a character, she could really move on beyond the original trilogy. It'd be fascinating to see what Charles Soule does with the next Crimson story after War of the Bounty Hunters.
That's all we have time for this week, but Making Tracks will return in episode 111, The Case of the Stolen Underpants. So thanks for joining us, and thanks also to Paul from Australia for that amazing question. So Mark, can you tell the good listeners how they can get in touch if they would like to drop us a line? You know, either send us a question, comment, theory or complaint?
I can do all of that, and that's quite easy for me to do if I read it correctly and not too fast. If you want to be part of the action and stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit FanthaTracks.com or check out the free FanthaTracks app through the App Store to follow us on your mobile device. You can reach out to us and send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@FanthaTracks.com. Paul from Australia's question was the last one we've got in the bag, so we need more questions. So send them in and we will talk about it, as we always do. Comment, like and share on any of our social media feeds at FanthaTracks, and be sure to subscribe, leave a review, preferably a 5-star one, on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Semple for composing the FanthaTracks intro, Adam O'Brien for our Making Tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Last week we had a midweek episode of Good Morning Tatooine. This weekend just gone, we should have had another episode, but there was a technical hitch, so we didn't do it. So hopefully next weekend there will be one. Brian will be on it. Hopefully Mark will be on it.
And I'll be on it.
And maybe somebody else, don't know, not sure. But remember, whatever happens, tune in to Good Morning Tatooine live Sunday evenings, 9 p.m. UK, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, on Facebook and YouTube, and if technology loves us, on Twitter. So check us out and share the news, come and comment, be a part of the fun. And that's me done for this episode.
So it is. Thanks for joining me again this week, dude. Look after yourself.
No problem.
And all that.
I will. And you, have fun.
I will try, especially if I end up on Twitter for Good Morning Tatooine. That's gonna that could be fun.
You'll be trending. That's what'll happen.
Oh god, that might not be a good thing. It'll be cancel. Be hashtag cancel Molecaster.
Really?
So yeah, okay. Possibly. Anyhow, everybody else, yeah, thank you for listening, and you take care, stay safe. I hope you join us for the next episode, and until then, may the Force be with you.
Radio, it's another episode of Making Tracks.